You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 6th of December. What do you want today? That is a big debate. Plus, points gained. I have an idea what we'll do. You never know, we might pivot. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, trying to make it a better experience for you to be a fan of the Utah Jazz. Hope you're great. Funny, I have the show ready. It's sitting in front of me. We're going to do points gained, which on Fridays, which we always do, which is fun. And I have two segments set up. And as I sat here about to start, I was like, I don't think the Jazz fan really wants this today. Like, I think we've been beat up enough having lost 5 of 6 that there's a feeling that maybe you don't want me telling you all the things that went wrong, right? Like, I just kind of feel like, all right, let's move on. Let's go play our next set of opponents and let's see what we can do. And so I do have two segments set up. I don't really want to belabor it anymore. I don't think you do either. This is a big stretch of games coming for us. And, you know, Quinn's got to find a way and this group's got to find a way to come together quickly, because really the irony of all of this, as badly as they're playing right now, is that not a lot's been lost. Now, you know, coming up here, we play Memphis, who's 26th in point differential, 26 offensively and 22nd defensively. Then we play Oklahoma City, who actually, all right, they're average. They're 19th in the league in points differential, but they're 21st offensively and 14th defensively. Then we go to Minnesota, who's pretty good. They're 12th in differential, but they're 18th and 13th. Overall, then we play Golden State, who's awful. They're the worst team in the league, 30th, 29th, and 29th. Then we have Orlando after that, who defense might cause us some problems, but they're 10th in the league defensively. They're 24th in the league offensively. Then we head to Atlanta, who's 29th in the league, 28th in the league in offense, 28th in the league in offense. Then we go to Charlotte, who is 20th in the league offensively and 27th in the league defensively. Like, it's quite a little stretch here of 7 games where the best off defense will play in the entire time is Orlando's 10th, Minnesota's 13th. We'll see the 29th, the 28th, the 22nd, the 27th, and the 14th ranked defenses, as well as I said, the 10th and the 13th ranked defenses. The offenses we're going to see are 29th, 28th, 26th, 20th, 24th, 18th. I forgot Oklahoma City's, I think I got 21st. Like, there's a stretch here right now where all the numbers can look better. We can feel a great deal better about ourselves. And if we don't, then probably should be a lot more worried than we are right now, having lost to the juggernauts we've lost to, right? We played Milwaukee pretty well. I do think, by the way, just side note, the impact of playing Milwaukee in that game without Rudy and everybody giving extra to stay in that game and being that close, I think wears you out. Just that's the impact of injuries. It's not that day. It's going on forward. But, you know, Milwaukee's 2nd and 2nd. Lakers are 5th and 6th. Toronto's 11th in offense, 5th in defense. Indiana's 12th and 8th. They are the worst team we played. Philadelphia's 17th and 4th. Like, that was quite a stretch. I don't think I forgot anyone. I mean, that is, there are 1, 2, 3, 4 teams in the NBA that are top 10 in both categories. We played 3 of them. So the absolute contrast here. Now, at the end of it, if we go roll through these next 7 games, I do think that you can't forget about what just happened, right? And the biggest difference might be that as the game goes on, we're not as bench-wise as disadvantaged as we have been. Let me walk through this.
if I can, without trying to be depressing. All right, Milwaukee game is strange. Rudy Gobert doesn't play, but our starters, even with Tony Bradley, are plus one. We make our first substitution, which is Joe Ingles. In that stint, we go minus four. You're going to see where I'm going here. Then we go to the rest of the bench. We actually, the bench has a really good night against Milwaukee. Like, they actually kind of, right? We were ahead by 13 at one point. So that game, hard to compare just because there's no Rudy in there. So let's go to Indiana. And this is really sums up kind of where we are. So our starting unit is in the first quarter of that game is plus three. We make our first substitution. Joe Ingles comes in and we're minus three. And we all love Joe. And, you know, he's generally gets kind of a pass in what's going on here. But like Joe's still struggling too, right? That is a part of our issue right now. Then when we go to the next stints, it just starts to kind of collapse. We go back to the Joe lineup to close that half and go minus six. Okay. But so the starters were plus three and then it falls apart. And then for whatever reason, the second time through that lineup falls apart again. Starters in the third quarter are even. And then our bench unit actually is kind of okay, but as it all goes on by the end, it's not great, and it all falls apart. And actually, the lineup, kind of the primary lineup that falls apart is not our starters. It's Jeff Green with a lot of our starters, and then Joe Ingles with a lot of our starters, and it kind of falls apart. But again, our starters, and what's strange to me is this group's inability once the bench comes in and loses the flow of the game to be able to find it again. So Indiana, it's not that direct. We're plus three. By the end of the quarter, we're trailing. The starters come back. And the starters, by definition, the starters never come back out on the floor. The Joe Ingles, the O lineup, which we all love, or at least thought we did, comes back out and fails. And the starters come back out there. Even the bench units take us. We go end up down further and end up being blown out. Okay. So let's go to Memphis. We win. Let's go to Toronto. Starters weren't great. They were minus six. Okay. Toronto just kicked our butt. But their starters stayed on the floor when our bench unit came in, and their starters were plus 18. That game was over before they made a substitution. Then our starters were plus 16 in their stint in the third quarter. I mean, this gets kind of interesting in this sense. In the midst of, if we take out the Milwaukee game, and you just start analyzing our starters, against Indiana, they're plus three. Against Toronto, they're plus 10. Against Philadelphia, their first quarter, they were minus three. First substitution comes in is Joe Ingles. They were even. Their second stint, they were even. First substitution came early, though. It was Emmanuel Mudiay because I think for Royce O'Neal, he must have gotten foul trouble, and then immediately we went to minus five. So in Philly, we were minus three. Against the Lakers, the starters were minus one and plus five for a plus four. So in not counting the Memphis game, which I can pull up if you want me to, but in the last four losses, our starters are plus 14 went on the floor. To me, that's pretty interesting. Like, that really goes to the minute we're going to our bench is when things are falling apart. What to do about that? I don't know entirely, but we'll try to discuss it. We'll look back a little bit at the Laker game. I have all the film study I did. I just feel like it's kind of a downer. Don't really feel like doing that. Today's show is brought to you by Intercap Lending. Steve Carter should be a Hall of Fame legend to you right now. Intercap Lending is a Utah-based company. It's been in the lending business for 40 years. They've done incredible work with our Locked On Jazz listeners. And the cool thing that they've built is that when I sat down with Brock and Steve probably 18 months ago, and we were like, all right, well, what can we do to give Locked On Jazz listeners kind of a unique experience with this? And we said, all right, well, we're going to do two things. We're going to give the Locked On Jazz listener their own personal loan person. So that's Steve Carter. That is your person. If you're doing a refi, it's when I did my refi. It's who I used. Unbelievable. And you can reach Steve at 385-885-28. 385-885-28. Then Brock said, well, let's also do that they have a corporate account. So all of you combine into one Locked On corporation. And in turn, that has allowed us to give you that deal. Jason Shepard, you probably know him, sports TV, radio personality, BYU Broadcasting. He says to me, you're absolutely right about Steve and Intercap Lending. After talking to Steve for the first time on September 30th, we signed the papers for our refinance today. This was October 21st. On our one-year-old home in Vineyard in Utah, Steve was polite, thorough of a guy, and a lender I've ever dealt with. He answered every question, followed up every time he said he would, did it all without being pushy one bit. He was fantastic. Our experience with him was great. Intercap was great. And oh, we saved a nice chunk of change on our monthly mortgage. That is what Steve Carter is all about. And it's been totally consistent in time after time. Tom Goslin, our loan officer with Steve Carter, absolutely amazing to work with. We knew the process inside and out. He was so patient with all of our questions, and we had a lot. He was very quick to respond to our emails, never made us feel stupid. I was working with another lender before Intercap, and they were only half as good. Thank you, Intercap Lending. Thank you, Steve. We're so excited to move into our new home. So Steve Carter's there for you. 385-885-28. That's 385-885-28. Intercap Lending, NMLS number 1900465. For more information, visit intercaplending.com. All right, so the question has to be, what can we do to solve the bench problem? The minute we take our starters out of the game, things are really rough. I mean, that's pretty stunning, right? So plus 14 over those five losses that have been by mammoth amounts, right? We lost to Indiana by 19. We lost to Toronto by 20 by the time it was done. We lost to Philly by, I guess, 9 by the time it was done. And we lost to the Lakers by 25 by the time it was done. So you look at those, with our starters on the floor, we're plus 14. And the minute we have anybody but the starters on the floor, we're minus 87. So what can we do? Well, the tricky part to this is the fact that the minute we take one of our primary scorers, Conley, Bojan, and Donovan, off the floor, we really struggle. So one is we need Joe to play a little bit better, not singling him out, but just that's true. Like, he's a really vital piece in that sixth man because he can ignite that, and maybe that's not a fair role for him. The second thing would be whether we do something with Mike to get him more touches. This is just an idea where he plays with the second unit, plays with the ball in his hands. You move Moutier off the ball and let Mike see if he regains his rhythm in that group. I mean, frankly, having Donovan out there in that group has not, it's gotten Donovan a lot of shots, but it's not a very productive way to use Donovan's minutes because the offensive rating's not very good in that circumstance. So it's, you have to kind of wonder whether that's the most productive way to use Donovan. When the year started, I thought that you matched Rudy, Conley, and Donovan together the whole time and let Bojan go play with the second unit. Maybe you try that. Again, the problem seems to be if we take one guy off the floor. The radical idea is that you just play your starters together almost exclusively and then just decide the bench is not very good and try to struggle through 14 minutes a night. And if Mike's playing 30, it's 18 minutes a night. That seems pretty hard to swallow. And it might be one of those things that mathematically makes sense and in reality doesn't make sense. There actually is some mathematical sense to it, that you're better off having, you know, your best lineup on the floor for a longer period of time and then just kind of funneling through the rest of it. I don't know what, you know, do you just turn it over to Emmanuel Moutier and let him go score? He's struggling a little bit. As I talked about yesterday with Dante, I feel like that might be a difficult time to ask him right now where he's been to do that. So I don't have a great answer to you on that. Tony Bradley's interesting in that he offensive rebounds and scores. And maybe that gives you like a, you steal a possession or two in that manner. Ed Davis is interesting because he does offensive rebound. And so he does steal you that possession or two. Tony Bradley's probably a little bit better on the pick and roll. And so that you actually can run an offensive play with him. But again, now you're playing one or the other there. I mean, how radical do you want to get? Do you want to get to, you play Jarrell Brantley, Mia One, and like, I don't know, go with this crazy energy unit that just plays to bees to the wall and does crazy stuff because you're just playing so hard, even though you don't have any, NBA, I don't know. Like, it's hard. You got to figure out who your NBA talent is. Jeff, we're minus 16 per 100 possessions with Jeff Green on the floor. So we're 11 percentage points worse offensively when he's on the floor, and 6 percentage, not percentage points, just per 100 possessions, we're 11 points worse when he's on the floor offensively, and we're 6 points worse defensively. George Niang, who I would think could be an answer, particularly on the offensive end, because he's got those one-on-one offensive skills we saw last year in the playoffs. Our offense is actually 16 points worse with him on the floor than off the floor. And I actually do kind of think that he's the answer, honestly. Ed Davis, our offense, really is struggling when he's on the floor. Joe Ingles, our offense, is struggling when he's on the floor. But, I mean, these are just all the right. This is the best. I mean, you look at us and it's just like, Emmanuel Mudiay has still got a positive differential, largely because our defense is better when he's on the floor, which I'm not sure I attribute to Emmanuel Mudiay, but maybe give him credit. Length, size, maybe he's doing some good things there. So it's an interesting mix and match here of trying to figure out how to find it. And there is not anything numerically or performance-wise that gives you an easy answer there. All right, let me quickly run through a few possessions from that film study, and then we'll do our points gained today. Thank you. I don't want to overburden this one and overplay it. It's interesting to me. First play of the game, perfect execution, focused there, perfect. It's 11-9. Ingles has a no pass possession. He misses a wide open Jeff Green, and in turn, everyone lollygags. Lollygags back. Ingles is on Gobert's man. Ingles gets all the way back after the no pass position, and he's on McGee, who's in the post. So Ingles is now guarding the post. Gobert turns at half court and starts backpedaling. He doesn't sprint back, at which point he would have noticed that Joe Ingles was guarding his man and bumped out. Instead, he kind of turns at half court, backpedals back to the mid-range area to kind of build his wall. And it ends up leaving Danny Green wide open for a three. And really, Rudy, if anyone, was the one who should have bounced out. But Rudy's job is always to kind of build that wall. And that just that a little bit is like there's no communication there, right? So Rudy sprints back. Joe could have yelled and said, hey, bump me out. Joe gets out to Danny Green. There wasn't any communication there at all. And it's just like that's a lack of togetherness, and I think that's related to the lack of ball movement on the previous possession. I've always felt that way. Then there's no connection. Next possession, there's another. They play. Donovan comes off a touch action where they hand Jeff Green to touch back, but they don't pass again. So now it's only two possessions in a row without a pass, and both misses. And now Bojan Bogdanović and Jeff Green miscommunicate on back-to-back pick and rolls between Anthony Davis and LeBron James. It's not clear necessarily. The first one, Bojan Bogdanović is killed on a pick, so I have a hard time believing Jeff Green's not supposed to switch. The next one, AD slips. It's a little bit more complicated. It's 16-15 at this point now, and another no-pass possession drive. Donovan misses the drive. And the layup, he does get to the basket, and then they run out the other way, and they get a three out of it. And so now all of a sudden, you're down four. And then, frankly, LeBron goes and sits down. Ed Davis comes in, and Anthony Davis just dominates the game. He just, Ed Davis can't guard Anthony Davis. Like, no kidding. That's where they have two of the five best players in the world, and they're just better than we are. You know, it's 30-26 at the end of one, and then we just completely butcher the end of the first quarter. We allow a three, then Joe Ingles goes way too early. They hit another three, and next thing you know, you're down. Instead of being down four, you're down 10 or not. I think it was down nine. So I have other thoughts. I just don't think you want to be belabored by all of it at this point. Like, there's just, it doesn't do anyone any good. But, you know, if I isolate these four things there, too many no pass possessions, which often lead to bad transition defense, because either that's natural or everybody wants to touch the ball so much that they're losing their engagement the other way back. Two, I did say it yesterday. I thought it was interesting that on the lack of communication issues, usually the guy that was the loudest was wrong. So there's an instinct to point right now rather than to look inward. The no pass possessions have led to bad transition defense. And then, frankly, in that game, some of their guys were great. Murdoch Hyundai has fabulous lineup of SUVs for you right now. The Palisade is the one that is taking everyone by storm. It is the new 8-seater. It's actually, I realized, very similar to what we purchased when we bought the Santa Fe. It's got the three rows of seats, all the bells and whistles, super nice. And everyone is talking about how great the Palisade has been. The Santa Fe is the regular sized SUV that we actually bought. I've driven a bunch of times. Terrific. Tucson, and then there's the zippy little Kona. That's the SUV lineup that exists and is so impressive at Murdoch Hyundai. Murdoch Hyundai is located in Logan and in Linden and at 4646 South State Street. Stop by, but tell us first. Let me know that you're going to Murdoch Hyundai so that we can get you set up and treated as you should be as the, you know, executive VP stud of all studs that you are. The Sonata and the Elantra are out as well. The new Sonata is taking names and having big things taking place. So email me at dlock09@gmail.com. Before you head over to Murdoch, if you're looking for a car, make sure you include the Hyundai on your list. I think you'll be blown away by what you get for the dollar. And then we'll have Blake or Jason or Ben or one of the really good guys down there help you out with your visit. So make sure you email me, dlock09@gmail.com, to find out more about Murdoch Hyundai and what they can do for you. It's a Friday, by the way, so Anthony and Adam's Locked On NBA show is up and out. They always do a lot of fun things. All right, let's play a little points gained right now, see who the best players in the league are. I didn't do last 10 games, probably should, but we're only at 20 for the season. So James Harden is far and away the number one offensive player in the league right now. Far and away. It's really incredible. His points gained is a 4.7. The last player to have an offensive season this good was Steph, who is at 4.7 in the 17-18 season. Steph's 15-16 season was a 5.8. That is the only season better that I can find than what James Harden is doing right now. He is using 30 possessions a night. He is plus 4.7. It's why the Rockets win. He's just that great. Karl Anthony Towns is number two in the NBA at 3.6 points gained. If you're new to points gained is the points that you score with your scoring opportunities more than what an average player would with the same possessions. Largely from a team-building standpoint, the premise is that if you can keep all your players at average, you'll be very, very good. You'll be great. You'll be championship caliber. And the other premise is that negative is far more disastrous than people realize. And the third premise is that if you have a negative player and you actually distributed their 16 possessions to average players, you'd be better off. That's Minnesota and Andrew Wiggins for years. So here are the top 10. James Harden is at 4.7. Karl Anthony Towns at 3.6. Devin Booker is at 3.0. I got a great question of why is Devin Booker so much better than Donovan Mitchell on this. Giannis Antetokounmpo is 3.0. Luka Doncic is 3.0. So we usually have three guys at 3.0. Right now we have five. Worth mentioning, Aaron Baines is at 2.6, and the minute he stopped playing, they stopped winning. Paul George is at 2.5. Neither of them have played enough. Sacramento has been playing better because Rashawn Holmes is now playing center. He's 2.4. There's great value to the dunk. Gordon Hayward was a 2.4 in his eight games before being hurt. Davis Bertans in Washington is a 2.3. Damian Lillard is a 2.3. Mo Wagner in Washington is a 2.3. I loved me some Mo Wagner. Kyle Lowry, limited time, 2.2. Rudy Gobert, plus 2.2. Trae Young, plus 2.2. I kind of dismiss Trae Young a tiny bit because how much they're losing in Lockdown NBA this week, and that was wrong. Evan Fournier, plus 2.2, which he has never been before. He's having a great year. Danilo Gallinari, plus 2.2. Memphis's Brandon Clark, plus 2.2. J.J. Redick, 2.1. Jared Allen, 2.1. Bojan Bogdanovic of Utah, 2.0, and P.J. Tucker, 2.0. Those are the players that are above 2, and there aren't many of them, right? So that's a big, big deal if you're above 2. Let's go. Who are the players that are below 2? We'll start at 2. Marco Bellinelli, minus 2.1. John Hollinger on Hollinger and Duncan wondered who Marco Bellinelli had pictures of in San Antonio to get him time. Dennis Smith in New York is a minus 2.1. Caris LeVert is a minus 2.3. Everybody's talked about how they're playing better because Kyrie Irving's hurt. I think they're playing better because Caris LeVert is hurt, and he's not minus 2.3. Kobe White, minus 2.3. These players are all negative enough that they wash out the best offensive players in the league that we just talked about. Theo Pinson in Brooklyn is a minus 2.5. Jarrett Culver in Minnesota, minus 2.6. Cam Reddish in Atlanta, minus 2.8. Welcome to the rookies. Dwayne Bacon in Charlotte, a minus 3.0. Miami was playing better with Justice Winslow out because he's a minus 3.1. RJ Barrett is a minus 3.1. Eric Gordon was a minus 3.5 before playing much. Russell Westbrook, minus 3.7. If they were to distribute his 23 scoring opportunities amongst average players, they would be 3.7 points better, or maybe 12 or 13 wins. Jordan Poole is worst in the NBA at minus 3.8. All right, let's take a look at your Utah Jazz. We did do a little of this earlier in the week, so I'm going to fly through this. Hopefully you heard it when we did it earlier in the week. Rudy is 2.2. Bojan is 2.0. Tony Bradley is 0.6. He's played, you know, 16 games now. That's an interesting number. Like, he's actually, Royce O'Neal's a 0.6. That is great for exactly what it is. George Niang is a 0.3, though we talked about the offense itself has not been better when he's on. Dante is even. Emmanuel Mudiay is a minus 0.3. Ed Davis is a minus 0.4. Jeff Green is a minus 0.5. And that's going to line 12% of the times. That's impressive. He gets to the line 12% of his possessions. Donovan Mitchell is a minus 0.9. Nigel Williams-Goss is my Joe Ingles a minus 1, and Mike Conley a minus 1.8. So that is, you know, those three right there is where the offense struggles, and yet it's not when they're on the floor. All right, so why is Devin Booker so much better than Donovan Mitchell statistically? Donovan's shot chart is 57% twos, 25% threes, 9% of trips to the line, and then he turns it over 9% of the time. He is shooting 44% from the field, 37% from three, and 83% from the line. Let's compare this to Devin Booker. Devin Booker is taking 49% of his shots as twos, so he's 8% less of his shots as twos. Interestingly, about Devin Booker is, or 8% of his possessions list, he takes the same rate of threes, and his free throw rate is only up 1%. He just turns it over a tremendous amount. 17% of the possessions that end in Devin Booker's hands end in a turnover. Crazy high number. We do not criticize him for that on points gained. In fact, looking it over, Mo Wagner is higher. Rudy Gobert and Trae Young are about the same, and that's about it. Alonzo Trier in New York is at 22%. But the difference is the Devin Booker's three-point shooting goes from 37 to 41, which is a big jump. His free throw shooting, they go to the line about the same amount of time, but Booker makes 95% of his free throws to Donovan's 83. And Devin Booker is shooting 51% from the field. And Donovan's shooting 44. What would be interesting here, and I'm now going to do this, is their shot charts are really pretty similar. In the sense that, I'm going to look at it just from just scanning it there. So if we look at Donovan Mitchell's shot frequency, Donovan's shooting 25% at the rim, which is down from 31% his rookie year. 29% of his shots are short mid. 17% of his shots are long mid. And 29% of his shots are threes. Okay? So I'll say that again, just as we compare it here in a moment to Devin Booker. Devin Booker's shots, this is on the fly. We didn't plan on doing this. Devin Booker is shooting 34% of his shots at the rim. So that's 9 percentage more of his shots on twos are at the rim than Donovan's. He's taking 18% of his shots as short mid-range. Donovan's taking 29% of those shots. They're both taking the same percentage of shots as long mid-range shots, and then they're both taking the same amount of shots as threes. So really, Devin Booker is taking 9% of his shots at the rim, where Donovan is taking those exact same shots as floaters. Devin Booker shoots 71% at the rim. Devin Booker's also 6'6", by the way. This really might be the difference. Or at least, and Donovan's 6'1". In this case, they're listed 6'3". Donovan, on the floater, shoots 36%. So Devin Booker's taking 9 shots and moving him to 71% category. Donovan's at 58% on those. And Donovan's taking 9% and moving him to 36%. And that's the reason. That is the sole reason. There's not actually a lot more to it. And that's why Devin Booker comes out better on points gained and one of the leaders in the league. The Orlando Magic and the Charlotte Hornets, I was asked about, and the Phoenix Suns. Let me just quickly do those before I get a phone call from the guys at the Zone to do my regular show. So let's look at the Orlando Magic, Evan Fournier, the Charlotte Hornets. Those are just not names you usually get asked, and the Phoenix Suns. I got asked about the guys who replaced. I mean, Derek isn't playing. I feel so bad for him. His mom passed away. He just hasn't played. So Phoenix, Devin Booker 3.0, Aaron Baines 2.6, DeAndre Ayton, who has played one game, Chick Diallo 2.1, Cameron Johnson, the rookie, 0.7. Give him credit. He's been great. Mikal Bridges 0.2, Javon Carter 0.1 is their backup point guard. Kelly Oubre is a minus 0.2. Dario Saric is a minus 0.3. Frank Kaminsky is a minus 0.4. That's just such a huge drop from Aaron Baines. Tyler Johnson, who I've always really liked, is a minus 0.6. Ricky Rubio's a minus 1.5, so he's almost exactly Mike Conley. He's shooting 39% from the field and 31% from three. And Ty Jerome, their rookie, is a minus 1.5. Charlotte and Orlando, you asked, which is unique. Oh, the Zone is on the line right now. All right, I will do Orlando, and then I got to go jump and do my interview. Evan Fournier is a 2.2. That is their only positive player on their roster. It's why their offense is bad. Markelle Fultz is a minus 0.2. Jonathan Isaac, a minus 0.4. Mo Bamba, minus 0.6. Terrence Ross, minus 0.7. DJ Augustine, minus 0.8. Aaron Gordon, minus 0.9. That's terrible for Aaron Gordon. Nikola Vukovic, minus 1.1. Michael Carter-Williams, always negative, minus 1.6. Al Farouq Aminu, minus 1.8. That is Locked On Jazz. Now tell your smart device to play podcast. Most recent episode of podcast Locked On NBA, get Anthony and Adam. Plus, Rejecting the Screen did a fun sit-down going ISO with Kenny Anderson. So go grab that over the weekend. Have a great one. This has been Locked On Jazz. Hopefully we'll have some fun news to talk to you about on Monday.